The thing I love about his writing, besides the fact that it's just so engaging, and his characters are, he's got such a good grasp of characterization, it's like he's got this world that is so real.
Hi, Annie.
Hi, Deb. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, my name is Anne Giever, or Annie, and I write as A.M. Giever. I have been writing for many years, but started publishing in 2019. I write post-apocalyptic science fiction, so far with zombies, though I also have a couple other series in the works, including a post-apoc plague kind of series and an urban series.
So, awesome. You are writing in my wheelhouse. Like, those are two niches that I love to read.
Yes. Well, it's so funny because my sister was asking me, what is it about post-apocalyptic? And I said, it's totally escapist. But it's a disaster. I was like, exactly.
And I said, it's learning to live again when everything gets broken. I don't know why it's so appealing, but it is.
It is. It's ridiculous. And, you know, I said, and when you write it, you control the apocalypse. So, you know, you are so never in danger.
What's your urban fantasy series about that you're working on?
I'm just kind of in the...
early stages,
like idea thing, but I'm going to, and this will tie in with the author we're going to be chatting about. I want to do, it's going to be set in my hometown, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the main character is going to be a fallen angel.
Okay.
And I want to, the motif I want to use to work around are folk tales of the various groups of immigrants who came to the city, especially in the Industrial Revolution era. Well, not Industrial Revolution, but, you know, in the big industrial period in the United States in the late 18, early 1900s, and kind of center some of the storylines around these different folk tales and have the different neighborhoods that, you know, some were historically Irish, some to this day are still the Jewish neighborhood, have those neighborhoods have characteristics of these folk tales kind of woven into the magic that's in the city.
Awesome. That I see how that ties into our topic tonight.
Yes.
Well, in case the listeners haven't read the title on the podcast episode, we are talking about the very prolific Charles DeLint.
Yes, Charles DeLint. I, Tapping the Dream Tree is actually the first of his books I read, which is what I suggested for this podcast. My husband gave it to me when I was sick. And
sweet.
He said, here, you'll really like this. And he was right. And so Charles DeLint, what's really funny is I wrote a review of Tapping the Dream Tree for BookBub because, you know, for anyone who is new to like authors and indie authors and whatnot, there are things you do when you start doing the business side of things, you know, and one of the things you want to do is you build your various presences. And so, you know, one of the ways you do that is by interacting on these communities. So anyway, I wrote a review of of my favorite short story of all time, Pixies. And, I mean, I wrote a review of the book, but Pixel Pixies in particular. And I had just read that story to my parents. My mother had been in the hospital. It was just my dad visiting her the one night. And I said, look, I'm going to read you this story. And, anyway, he liked my review. And I just looked at this and I couldn't believe it. And I ran upstairs and I said to Drew, and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, and like, so like I printed it out and hopefully someday I'll like, you
know, that's awesome.
But I was like, oh my God. You know, for those who are not familiar with his work, he writes urban fantasy, but the thing he's done that I love so well is he's created a city called Newford, and mm-hmm. not all of his books, but many of his books and short stories have some connection to Newford or are set there.
Right.
And because he's done something really smart, like I'm planning to do my series in Pittsburgh, but I'm also starting to see the advantages of, you know, like making up a city. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he's got all these really interesting neighborhoods, you know, and, right. you know, things he's been able to do, you know, like, you know, like there's the Kickahaw Indian Reservation is, you know, not too far from Newford, and some of his stories take place there, or some of the mm-hmm. characters from the res and come into Newford. And I can't do that. Like, there's no way I can do anything like right. that. But the thing I love about his writing, besides the fact that it's just so engaging, and his characters are, he's got such a good grasp of characterization, it's like he's got this world that mm-hmm. is so real, and he's got these characters who pop in and out of yeah. the stories, you know, and so they're not, you know, some stories are all about them, and then sometimes, you know, certain books are about certain characters, you know, mm-hmm. But you'll still get some of those supporting characters, you know, or even it'll just be a setting, you know. I can't think of the name of the book I was trying to tell you about. It's about a woman. It has to do with myth time, and she's from Mexico. It's El Poco de Mito, you know, the time. And it's set in an art center that's, if you read enough of his stories, you will become familiar with it. And so mm-hmm. it's like city is its own character. Mm-hmm. And that I love, you know, and that is one of the things that's so great, because it's like you're always finding Easter eggs.
Right.
You know? So that is like something about his writing that is just so spectacular. He also, like his motif, for lack of a better word, is Irish music.
And it's mm-hmm. as definitely all throughout.
Right. And he is a musician himself. He's an
Oh, played. I didn't know that.
Yes. And you know, my family's my background is Irish American. My father's from Ireland. My mother's okay. from Ireland. So, you know, just on a personal level, that's something that I really, really connect with and, you know, find mm-hmm. very accessible. But it's he uses it in a really great way to just, you know, like to weave it in and out of the stories, and not all of them have it, you know. I mean, some of them, it's just, oh yeah, that's mm-hmm. so the musician, you know, and that's right. the end of it in that particular story. I like that very much, and I also, you know, it's interesting because like we were speaking earlier, you know, after we decided, okay, this is what we're going to talk about, I was like, well, how many of his books have I read? And I feel like I have not read a lot of them.
And did you count how many he has? Do you remember the number?
Over 20. Easy. Easy. Oh,
I was thinking it was actually higher than that. I mean, I didn't count. I didn't look up how many, but it's so much.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like 40 books. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a ton of books. And, you know, so I, oh God, what the heck was I going to say?
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I can do it all on my own too. I got some of his books. Oh, I got some of his books and, you know, I started reading them in order. And, mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I tend to find and you can tell me what you think based on what mm-hmm. you've read. I tend to find his writing very uplifting. You know, it's very, you know, it's not that all the stories are necessarily all about happy things, but you right. know,
he definitely writes about some dark stuff.
Right, some hopeful stuff, but I read some of his early stuff and I was like, wow, this is actually pretty not what I'm used to compared mm-hmm. to the later stuff. Like some of the earlier stuff was, you know, like some of the characters were pretty, you know, I mean, characters that I knew from later things, you know, they were very different in some of these. I'm thinking about the very first book he wrote, which whose title I have to look at my phone to refer to.
I actually don't know any of that. Like I have several collections of his short stories, but I have no idea about the chronological order, like which ones were written first and in what order they go in. That's just right. beyond me. It's just a world that I have jumped into and I keep catching things in the middle of things.
Yeah. And of course, you know, the list I pulled up is completely not in order because, you know,
of course, be,
like way too easy. So we're just going to not even go there. But yeah, so, and that was kind of surprising to me.
Well, I mean, he is building this universe and his characters are growing mm-hmm. with like they're experiencing character growth.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was kind of, that was really interesting too, because then, well, first it made me want to keep reading more, you know, keep reading mm-hmm. the stuff. And I like to do things in order anyway, but to read things in order so that I could just see it, you know, because I remember my husband was a real fan of the show Farscape. I don't know if you've ever right. seen it. Okay. And like, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, I got some hair up my nose that I wasn't going to watch it. I thought it looked stupid. And then I saw a preview for a later series, for a later part of the series. And this one character, she was so emotional and she had not been in the one or two episodes I saw. And that mm-hmm. made me want to watch the show because I wanted to know how she got to that point because, right. you know, she was, and great show, by the way. Everyone should watch
it. I used to own all the DVDs before when DVDs were still a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We have it on Blu-ray. but you know, and so that's like been, that's really been really fun for me personally, just to read, to read it and get to see the changes that I was unaware mm-hmm. of. Jumped in late, but again, and then I'll stop talking. I swear to God, the other stuff that's great about his stuff is you don't have to read it in order. You can mm-hmm. start anywhere. And that is one of the things I think is a real talent. And, because things are self-contained enough to be coherent, engaging stories and, or novels, yet they are,
you don't need the backstory.
Yeah, yeah, but they're flexible enough to, you know, if you've got mm-hmm. the backstory, you can do it, and then it's even an even richer experience. So,
I agree because, like I said, I had no idea who Charles DeLint was until you mentioned him, and then I got these short story collections, and I don't know which one comes first or which one was written before the other one or compiled before the other one. So I just kept bouncing around between these books, reading random short stories, and it was like such a like. This is going to sound kind of cheesy, but it was like such a delight to like stumble upon these characters and then find them again in another story and see another aspect of their life. Like, I think that's the best part about his work is that it is like a self-contained universe, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a character that might be the main character of one short story is a side character in another one. Mm-hmm. And just everything just keeps tying together. And I imagine, as the artist, like as the writer, that must be really nice and freeing to be able to just make this world and weave it in and out and put it together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's something I find so appealing. And, it's so funny because I always have, cause I've wanted to like work on an urban fantasy series mm-hmm. for years. And whenever someone would say, well, why aren't you? I'd say, well, when I can figure out how to not be a Charles DeLint hack, then
you can do it on your own.
I'm probably going to be a Charles DeLint hack, you know, because it's funny too, because until recently, his urban fantasy, and, you know, he's basically credited with inventing the genre. Mm-hmm. Urban fantasy is all I've ever read of urban fantasy. So, you know, then I read some other stuff and I was like, wow, this is like really different than what I
used to.
Urban fantasy, you know, like this is a mystery novel with a sorcerer, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
And there's no reason why you couldn't do that, but it was just so different. You know, it was actually a very good series. I read the whole series and, but the richness of having this larger universe mm-hmm. was something that I wasn't finding. And that was kind of a real shock to me. And then I was like, wow,
everything else pales in comparison.
Well, it's not even that. It was just thinking about like my own plans. It was kind of like, well, I don't know. I'm going to write this thing, but I might not be writing what other people think of as urban fantasy. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how it will turn out, but you know.
Yeah. I think his story is like, they aren't that hard edge that you do find in some urban fantasy. At least most of them aren't. I mean, some of them do have a dark, but it seems like they're mostly like folk tales, and there's something like almost gentle about them that you can pick it up, but I'm not scarred for life from reading it.
Yeah. They are very gentle. Yet they can be like really kind of spooky.
Yeah. They can definitely give you like a gut punch sometimes, but it's not like overly dark, I guess. I'm not saying this very well out loud. Like, I'm not putting my thoughts into words very well. But yeah, it's something like whimsy. There's a lot of whimsy in it. And I think that softens all the hard edges out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about that. It definitely does. And you know, something else that I just thought of, and I was thinking of it specifically because I was reading Tapping mm-hmm. the Dream Tree. Now, I could be wrong about this because I haven't read all of his stuff, but mm-hmm. like there are these two characters in that series, the Kellydies, you know, Maren and Saren Kellydie. Yep. Mm-hmm. Karen Kellydy, and they're these musicians, but you know, they're also not exactly just musicians, and you mm-hmm. know, they're kind of immortal, kind of fairies and whatnot. Uh-huh. And I, you know, I was thinking about it and I was like, you know, I've never read a story where they were the main characters. Like
I have.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I did. That was actually the very first short story I picked up of his, actually.
Oh, very good.
Was one. It wasn't the married couple that was the main characters. It was her. She was the main character, and she was having basically a little fight with this mischief spirit. And mm-hmm. this was like way back. This was before Newford had become a city. Like it was mm-hmm. like still country. Like she had a cottage in a forest. Mm-hmm. But that was the very first story I picked up of his.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay, well that's good to know. But it was interesting because it made me wonder, like, How many characters are there who never get their own story and yet mm-hmm. feel very integral to the world? And like when I see them, I'm just like, oh yeah, hey, how you been doing? You know. Mm-hmm. And, I'm kind of curious about that. That's something like that's I've been mm-hmm. wondering about and looking forward to trying to figure out.
That short story was Laughter in the Leaves, by the way. I just like reached and looked at the contents of the book I have next to me in case you want to read it. You know what I found as I'm reading these? I kept looking online for like a character encyclopedia of his characters. Like I want somebody to be enough of a fanboy to make an online encyclopedia that tells me where where this character is like featured in, like what stories this character's in. You know, I crave that. I need someone to do that, please.
You want your Dylan Wiki.
Yeah, exactly. I actually was looking, some people have started it, but it's not complete. There's a fandom.newford, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's not complete, unfortunately. I was specifically looking for one character and they were not there.
Oh, darn it.
I know.
How rude.
And you know what? One of the early ones I read too was actually a children's book of his. I read it to my kids. Mm-hmm. Circle of Cats. Have you read that one?
I've heard of Circle of Cats, but I haven't read it. I've seen it in when I've been looking for things online, but mm-hmm. I haven't read that one.
It seems to be, if you've also heard of Cats of Tanglewood Forest, mm-hmm. it seems to be like a very cut down version of that novel.
Okay.
Into like a children's version. I'm not sure which one came first. That's the thing. Like I was saying, like, I don't know chronological order. I don't know. Did the short story children's version come first? Did the novel length version come first? Because then that all ties together again in The Seven Wild Sisters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was very surprised to find those characters coming back in that story.
So which characters have you liked the best since you've started reading? I know that's a terrible.
Very good question. I know. I like the girl who plays the blue fiddle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot Steely or I don't remember her name exactly. And one I'm following right now in the Cats of Tangled Forest meandering storyline is Lillian. I like Lillian quite a bit. You see her as a young girl and then she's like an 80-year-old woman. I'm trying to remember specific characters.
Like,
sorry, my lights just turned off. Hold on a second. I'm sorry.
Oh, you know, you're fine. Like, I really like Jilly.
Artist.
Everybody loves Jilly. Mm-hmm. You know, I really like Jilly and I really like Jordy. And I know that there's like a bazillion other characters who I really like whose names I can't remember.
Jilly reminds me of there's a woman character who says like they keep telling her she's part fairy and she's made this dream city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sophie.
Sophie, yes. I really like the Sophie stories. They're so interesting. Like she goes to sleep and enters this whole nother universe. How is her body getting rest? I don't understand.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And I literally just read one of the Maven stories yesterday. It's such an interesting idea to let, cause like I've seen that in, I'm sure it's been in a bazillion books. That was in one of the books in The Passage, one mm-hmm. of the later books in that series about vampires, but it wasn't mm-hmm. like, you know, nice, sparkly, friendly vampire kind of
series. I read the first book and I might have read the second. I don't remember if I've read the second book, but I definitely read the first one.
Yeah. So one of the characters, you know, later, I think it's in the third book, you know, he mm-hmm. He ends up having that kind of
experience.
Life. Yeah, that experience where he can be with a character who he can't be. I can't remember if she died or she turned into a vampire or what happened, mm-hmm. but they couldn't be together in real life. But right. they were together in his dream life. And, okay. And it was interesting, but that's the only other book that I've read that I've seen that in. But again, I haven't read every book, and I'm sure people who are like, "Oh, I know," you know, this
possibly. But yeah, I really like Sophie's weirdness, I guess, that she just goes this other place. But speaking of vampires, have you read his? I only know of one of the vampire short stories. Have you read that?
Mm-mm.
It was called Sisters. And his take on vampires was really unique. I loved it. I was like raving to my husband after I read it about how awesome it was. So he basically is theorizing that, yes, vampires are vampires. You know what? You suck the blood out, they become another vampire. You know, that's how you get vampires. You kill them by beheading them or staking them through the heart. But his theory about what repels vampires, I think, was the most interesting part. You know, like the classic, like garlic or a cross, like that kind of stuff, like vampires don't like it. He was like, no, that's not how it is. Maybe for someone who loved garlic or someone who was really religious, but if you're a vampire, the thing that repels you is the thing you loved the most before you were a vampire.
Ah.
So one of the characters was repelled by fuzzy bunny slippers. And one of the characters was repelled by Easter. It was their favorite holiday.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. I guess I'd be repelled by Christmas, which would be really sad.
Yeah, and he was saying you'd be surprised how, like, the percentage of vampires that were repelled by chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It was so like awesome and fluffy, and I just loved it. I was just raving about it. Like, this was the most awesome thing I'd read.
It is so fun when you find something where they take something and just kind of flip it over mm-hmm. in a way that's completely unexpected and really.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Well, now there's one book of his that I don't know the name. I'd have to look it up. No, I love The Onion Girl, and that's a story about Jilly Coppercorn.
That's one of the ones I bought, but I have not gotten around to reading it.
The Onion Girl is fantastic. And I read an interview with him once, and they asked him, is there anything that people ask you about? And he's like, oh, The Onion Girl, everybody wants to know what happens to her, you know? And and I guess maybe 15, 20 years later, he did write a sequel. To finish her story. And I hated it. Oh my God. I hated it so much. I mean, I like the ultimate end, but oh yeah, I just did not like the story in the least. And I was like, so,
especially if Jilly's one of your favorite characters.
Yeah, I was so sorry that I was just, it didn't do anything for me, mm-hmm. obviously. And I was just like, oh, I mean, I could totally understand why people wanted to know and, you know, whatnot. Right. But I was like, God, I wish you just kind of left it alone. You know, but you know, that's fine. You know, I'm just one person and, you know.
Right. That sucks though when that happens. I remember that happening to me. I don't like admitting this stuff on air, but when I was a kid, I was a new kid in town. I didn't have any friends, and I was given a copy of Ender's Game to read. Like, here, mm-hmm. read this. I loved it. Like, I'm like a 9-year-old girl reading Ender's Game. Mm-hmm. And I read it over and over, and like, I killed that copy. Like, it was a hardcover. The binding came off. I read it so much. And then finding out later in life, like, what the author's like, and then what his idea of the rest of the story was. Like, I didn't know there were more books because mm-hmm. I only had the one as a child. And right. I just never looked it back up for whatever reason. And so I can identify with that because that experience of finding out stuff about the author and then finding out how he envisioned the rest of the series and world being just like, oh, he was so off-putting. It's like, took my favorite book and ruined it.
Yeah. I think I've read the first 3 books of those, but I read them as an mm-hmm. adult, you know, okay. You know, I can see how like reading them as a kid.
Right. Know? Yeah. Cause I basically read them at the age that the protagonist was in that first book. And I didn't know any others existed after that. Like, that was the only thing I had. So bad.
Yeah. That's always kind of a drag, you know, at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, it wasn't
that bad.
Experience. I mean, that's like a much more seminal experience, you know, that packs so much more emotional resonance. And then it's kind of like, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I haven't read The Onion Girl. Like I said, I got it in my big thrift books haul of Charles DeLint, but Jilly's in so many of his short stories. Like at least in the ones that I've read, like she's, I don't know, in one out of every three, it feels like I come across, like she's there just even as a side character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Jilly's in a lot of stuff. And I think that is probably one of the reasons why he got so many questions over the years about what happened to Jilly and are you going to write more about Jilly? Mm-hmm. Is because of that, you know? And yeah. So,
what is The Onion Girl? Is it like Jilly's life story or does it pick up after a certain point?
It's
like
just,
after she got to Newford, like, is it a story on its own?
Newford. She's already in Newford and it's about, okay. You know, it's just like a for her in the book, it's a contemporary experience of, you know,
okay.
Something right. happens.
Right. I didn't know if he went into her a very tragic and awful past.
Well, the second book does that.
Oh, okay.
The second one does, and yeah, the second book does, mm-hmm. but the first one doesn't. So, another thing I really like about his work is that so many of his characters are on the they're either outcasts, outright outcasts, or they're people who are kind of like on the edge of things.
Mm-hmm.
Or people who are not mainstream, you know, mm-hmm. like a lot of his characters are punk rockers, you know,
right. I'm
a family of punk rockers. So, you know, I immediately, mm-hmm. identify, you know, some of his characters, a lot of his characters, you find they're runaways, mm-hmm. or, you know, have had difficult childhoods that they're working to like get their life on track, you know? So, you know, that it's almost, I don't know if he was like trying to do this on purpose, but it's almost like you've got this immediate underdog who, you know, is sympathetic, who you're rooting for.
Right.
You know, and so, and then of course, tons of his characters are artists and, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes
artists, musicians,
artists, musicians, they're like, you know, sometimes they're the starving artists, then there's like the one who's like, you know, she's thinking of herself as a sellout because she's decided to do all these corporate artwork, mm-hmm. you know, corporations, and she hates it, but you know, mm-hmm. she needs to pay her bills, and so that's always really, to me anyway, that's very appealing because you know, like prior to deciding to take the plunge with writing, I just did the regular, you know, mm-hmm. 9-to-5, always had a straight job kind of thing. And so it was really appealing to see people who, even if they were imaginary, who were, you know, pursuing these artistic, unconventional lives. And then mm-hmm. they have magic.
Right.
I mean, it's like just when it couldn't get better, it's got magic too. So
that's something I really like about his books, or I guess his work in general, is his magic use. Like it's not like you're casting a spell and you have a wand. It's like folky magic kind of. It's like natural spirit magic. I don't know. I'm no way explaining any of this well, but
it's like the magic. There's magic everywhere, and you can't if you. Yes, you're right. This is like so fabulous because there's magic everywhere, and mm-hmm. it's just a question of whether you are open enough to seeing it. You stumble across it, you know, or you have some kind of, you know, experience where suddenly like the door is opened and you can see past, you know, the everyday. And mm-hmm. that is, And that's cool because you can, it's something that like could happen to anybody, you know, mm-hmm. it could happen to you as you're walking down the street. And it's interesting too, because like, I'm the worst with titles. I'll get this to you when I'm done. You would think that like the person would like have their act together and have a list, but I was like making dinner up until like the very last minute. So I could like,
no problem. You get me the list. I'll put it in the show notes.
But like one of the earliest, it was one of his very early books. It's about a painter and mm-hmm. she, the things she would paint would come into the world, you know, the people or the creatures or whatnot. And
kind of like Sophie dreaming things up when she was a kid.
Exactly. You know, but so, you know, and for, in this story, like they come into the world and her reaction to that happening is very different at different points of her life. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because you have characters who their relationship with the magic changes. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes it ends up being like a full circle thing, or sometimes it just ends up being like a transformation. Mm-hmm. So, and actually, you know, you were just mentioning this and then it got me thinking. So I was reading, I want to see which story it is. I need to get the table of contents. It was the Maven story where embracing the mystery. It was the story where it's one of Sophie's friends. And I'm just looking for the friend's name. She's got a dog who belonged to her best friend. Mm-hmm. And she and this friend has died, and she's really missing her friend. And the story starts off with, I heard a dog speak once. And she tells this story about how she and this dog, Fritzy, the dog just talked to her one night and they talked about how much they missed Gina. Mm-hmm. And so she ends up going to Maven with the dog. And seeing her friend, and she thinks that she's the one who took them there, but it turns out the dog took them there. The dog, Maven, because the dog was the one who really needed to see her. And I was just like, oh, it was just such a good thing. It's also interesting, like how stories hit you at different times in your life, you know, cause you can read the same story. Cause like the first time I read this, one of my very best friends, he passed away in 2013 from cancer, and he was very young. He was 33. And it was just like a drag, the biggest drag. Mm-hmm. And I read this book after he died, and I didn't remember this story at all. But when I was reading the story and like she was going, because she got to see her friend again, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I wish I could go to Maven and I could see Jamie and we could laugh and carry on about things. And you know, it just like really got me in a way that I don't remember it getting before, you know? And mm-hmm. so it's interesting when you think about like how stories affect you and how surprising it is that they affect you the way they do, because sometimes you, at the time I probably read this the first time, I thought about Jamie every single day, you know, even mm-hmm. if it was passing, I thought about him every day. 18 right. years later, I still think about him almost every day, but it's not that same intense thing. And yet right. the story really hit me more 18 years later. So, you know, so, I guess that's one of the things too, that's great about when you go back to a book and you reread a book, you know, and not only do you get to discover all the things you've forgotten and
or missed
lately for mm-hmm. me, I seem to forget everything. But, you know, you just get to like discover these different things. And, mm-hmm. And I think that's what I like. One of the things I like the best about his books is there's like always something to discover. There's always a new layer. There's always something new about Newford that you didn't know, or something new you didn't know about a person, or a new person you haven't met yet. Mm-hmm. And as corny as that sounds, it makes for just a really rich and vibrant experience as a reader. It makes it real in a way that other forms of fiction aren't. Because I don't know, this is going to sound silly because, you know, we're talking about a writer who's created a world with where there's all this magic and mm-hmm. whatnot. But in some ways it feels more real. It feels like something that could happen. Whereas, you know, like when I pick up this science fiction book, well, you know, I can love it and it can be this whole world and I can be sucked in. But at the end of the day, I know that's not going to happen to me, you know?
Right.
You know, when I read, like I love Anne McCaffrey's Dragon Riders of Pern.
Mm-hmm.
Love them, but I'm never going to get to be a dragon rider. You know, it's just right. not gonna happen. But I might go out the front door and stumble into something. You know, there's uh-huh. something.
I completely understand. Yeah,
so accessible about them that makes it just feel like I didn't tell my husband to shut his phone off. I think that's part of the appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Which I hadn't really thought about or articulated until just now, but I think that's definitely one of the things that makes them so much fun.
I agree. He writes, like you said, he kind of writes that outer ring, like almost outcasts, and everybody's got very real tics and everybody has very real flaws. And it's just like a touch of like folky magic. And I agree. Like it feels like it very well could happen or have happened. And he's just recounting something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like somebody told him a story and he's telling mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, for anyone who's a writer, sorry if anyone's listening, there was like noise here and I was getting very annoyed. If you're a writer, he's a really good person to read for learning characterization. Mm-hmm. Because I think some writers are just so fabulous at characterization, but you can learn how to get better at characterization too. Mm-hmm. And you do that by reading people who are good at it. And so, like, you know, he is, so if you want to get better characterization and be entertained, you know, and feel like you're going to make a bunch of new friends and, you know, have a cool place to visit, I would recommend definitely reading his book because he's very good at characterization and he's very understated about it.
I definitely 100% agree with that. And we are almost out of time. So, can you let the listeners know where they can find you online, you and your books and your review of the Charles Lynch story?
Oh, yes. I'll send you that review is on BookBub.
Okay.
And I also have a list of like the best post-apocalyptic science fiction mm-hmm. and fantasy books you'll read in one sitting on Book Shepherd. And I think it's there too. You can find me online. I have a website, A.M. Geever. So that's A.M.G.E.E.V. as in Victor, E.R. Sometimes people hear B.
It is a hard letter to say.
Yeah, amgeever.com. I have a Facebook page, again, A.M. Geever author, and I'm on Instagram. I'm not on Facebook as much these days. I pop in and out, but I've been on that serious hardcore writing kick of really trying to get some stuff done so I can get more stuff out this year. So
I understand how that works. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me tonight. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Read and Write Podcast is edited and produced by Deborah Z. Barth. Music was provided by Lo-Fi Girl and can be found at lofigirl.com or on their YouTube channel. Audio effects were created by Red Octopus and Black River Phonogram. Show notes and previous episodes can be found at readandwritepodcast.com. And that's it. Thank you for listening to the show. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to rate Read and Write on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you have a suggestion for a future episode, drop me a line. I'm always open to suggestions. Also, did you know that Read and Write publishes 3 episodes a week? Check out the podcast's YouTube channel for Write With Me Mondays live streams and 30-second book reviews on Fridays.